from an employer's perspective, it's going to say a lot about an employee who comes into somebody's space and is oblivious of his music's effect on the people all around him.
I don't think I've ever been on a job site of yours with a radio playing music on ever, period. So that's what we want to talk about. What are your reasons for that?
Wow. So first of all, I have nearly gotten into fights before when I was a younger man, when I was a foreman on a job and somebody wanted music playing and no, we're not playing music, man. I mean, you can party when you get home. And they would say, well, there's study. I remember one guy, Rob, there's studies that have been done that productivity goes up when music's playing. Yeah, probably if you're working on an assembly line, right? Mm-hmm. But I will tell you that there have been times working entirely by myself when I've had music on for short periods of time. But here's my objection. It's probably partly that I am wired a little too tight. Okay, so that's part of it. And it's partly that I'm a musician. Okay, I've played music off and on since I was little, and I played kind of semi-professionally for a while. I don't think that's overstating it. And I still play. And so when the music's on, I get drawn into the music. It's hard for me to just leave music in the back. You know, it finds its way to the front of my brain. And maybe I have too much imagination, because if I walk into somebody's house and there's a television on, sorry, I'm a lousy conversationalist. Bam. The television has my attention, and I have a real hard time splitting that off. So here's what I think it is. I think that when I'm building something that requires, when I'm solving problems, it requires all of my concentration to be able to suspend the problem in my brain and rotate it and look at it from different angles and not to get caught up in an assumption. And if I'm listening to music, a big part of my creativity is drawn up in interacting with the music. I don't know. Does that make any sense?
Yeah, but what about, I mean, when you're just half of the day often is just moving the lumber from here to there or mm-hmm. cleaning this ditch out for mm-hmm. whatever's going in it. And what about those moments?
That would be a great time for music.
But you still never really do it.
How about this? How about the times you have been working with me have been the times when I have someone on the job with me?
That makes sense.
You know? But I sometimes, not very often, because I'm not set up for it. You know, sometimes yeah. I leave my truck doors open if I'm all by myself.
Yeah.
But if I'm remodeling somebody's house, I'm not all by myself. I mean, they are there. Mm-hmm. And they're going to walk out and want to talk about something. And wait a second, let me go shut the music off. Shut the music
and
off.
Not to mention, it's just less professional in general. And when AC/DC is at like 11, anywhere, it's kind of like, and it's okay. Yeah. In somebody's house, that... Absolutely. Or even in somebody's neighborhood. When I was remodeling the last house I lived in, one of my guys had his radio on and the neighbor came across the street and chewed him out.
See, that's what I mean.
I was kind of like, wow, that's my new neighbor, I guess. So, and sure enough, that's the type of neighbor they were.
Yeah.
But it's certainly less professional.
It is that. But I do. So in the blacksmith shop, I would love to be able to have the music on because the problems are solved bit by bit, and you can all, I mean, but the problem is the noise I'm making compromises the music.
Yeah.
So that's part of it. In construction, there's so much banging and saws and chopping and stuff that, I mean, the music just has to be in the background. And
yeah,
that doesn't do it for me.
I've wondered sometimes, especially speaking about radio, because a lot of radio stations are just, they've been playing the same songs for decades. Mm-hmm. And I know a lot of construction guys have been listening to those same radio stations for decades. And I just wonder how many times has this guy, this electrician mm-hmm. heard mm-hmm. this song come on the radio, and does that ever get old? And it seems like it would. But then I kind of, at the same time, it made me think, I don't know, maybe it kind of helps him like be in work mode. And this is just kind of like when his tool belt's on, like uh-huh. that's what it feels like on your hips.
Uh-huh.
And this is what it sounds like when classic rock station is on in the background, and it's just sort of like the mindset of it's work time I'm working.
It's the zone. So you're a musician. I'm a musician. Do you think it's different for people that are just not musical? So the music is just what it's like. It's like lighting. It's like temperature. It's just part of a condition you're working in and not something that requires that you think about it.
I don't know. Not for me. When I'm laboring and the music's on, even if it's music I like, it certainly doesn't, even if I am thinking about it, it doesn't slow me down, I guess. I don't know. Uh-huh. I don't think there's a big, I don't think that musicians enjoy music any
differently.
Maybe differently, but certainly I don't think you can say they get more enjoyment or less enjoyment out of music than the average. That's like saying, does a chef enjoy eating, you know, this cheesecake more because he knows how to make it? Okay. I don't know.
What if he does? What if he can be more critical? What if he can analyze that cheesecake better?
That might mean he likes it less than the person who just plain likes eating it.
Yeah. He's fussier. But what about a writer? Does a writer enjoy a book differently than someone who's not a writer?
I'm sure it's differently, but I wouldn't say that they can enjoy it to the level of 100, everybody else can only enjoy it to a level of 80. That's kind of a snooty.
Yeah.
I'm sure there's chefs and writers who think that's true.
Right.
And musicians who very much think that they're so deep, they get more out of it.
Yeah,
But I don't think that, I think that a lot of people do get maximum enjoyment out of the country radio station and like the Billboard hits, even if that's kind of like cotton candy to a musician.
Yeah, yeah.
To them, it's not sort of, I don't know.
I think probably there's probably truth to that.
So in this day and age, well, first of all, like you mentioned, you may not be set up for it. And I got to mention these job site radios that Makita and Milwaukee are all putting out. Have you seen, I'm sure you've seen
these. DeWalt cordless, big, bad radios.
Well, and
with roll bars, right?
Yeah, but the cool thing is not only that they're big and loud, but most often they also charge your drill batteries. It's like this station. They charge your phone. You plug your drill batteries into them. If there's no power to plug the radio in, it'll run off of the drill's battery. Mm-hmm. It's actually kind of a neat tool, and you got to have a charger anyway. So that does make sense. But the point being, now with our phones and Bluetooth and podcasts, and we can be very easily set up to listen to not just music, but
anything
much more valuable and important.
So I like listening to Dan Carlin and Jordan Peterson in the Blacksmith Shop. Love it. But I can't imagine how I could do that on the Spec House with you there filming and Daniel cutting studs.
Yeah.
How would I listen to those guys and get any be anything except annoyed when I can't hear them resolve a thought that they've been building up, you know?
I feel that same way, because listening to mindless radio or music allows me to tune it out and it's in the background. But if it's a podcast or a lecture or a book that I want to like hear, it is painful to try to like push pause and be like, hold on. And
it's painful.
You don't want to fade. And then you're trying to like rewind it to get back to where you were.
Right.
That's kind of miserable. But once in a while, the stars line up where it's a job.
Yeah.
Maybe like blacksmithing.
Yes.
Or maybe like, I don't know, mowing the yard.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Where you really truly can just absorb it. And no downside, and maybe even you can absorb the lecture in a way that's better than if you were, I don't know about reading, but certainly better than if it was just on in the background, you know.
Yeah. So you just showed me that little video that Buddhist monk talking about meditation, right? Here's some fellow who ostensibly is something of an authority on meditation, talking about it, meditation in a completely different way than I had ever considered it, which, I mean, that neither validates nor invalidates what he says. It just kind of surprised me. And he's talking about the monkey mind and that chatter being interrupted. Now, that makes real sense to me, because we have a stream of consciousness, right? I've heard it termed that way in things that I've read or heard, that as long as we're awake, if we are awake, there's just a storm of thoughts blowing through our brain. It's just coming through all the time, and shutting it off is really hard, maybe impossible. I loved his acknowledgement of that the thoughts are good, that you have to have thoughts, and that to interrupt them just by concentrating on your breathing kind of gives you a little space. It's not that you shut them off. It's that you ask them to think about something for a second.
Yeah.
That made sense, right?
Yeah, that is right. And I don't, somewhere I heard a person talking about meditation and they were kind of making that point, but sometimes doing a specific task or maybe listening to music can absorb you so fully that all of your brain waves are concentrating on that thing. And that's happened to me on occasion. And it really is kind of, if not relaxing, it's certainly refreshing when you come out of that and you are back to whatever all the other thoughts are. And I think that might be part of why people like working in their garage, you know, after work or doing some of these things, because it really does take a lot of your thoughts and keep some of those other commotions out.
I think that's one of the reasons people like work, real work, because we all can think of days that are really busy or really demanding or really productive, and the day starts at 8 a.m. and you can't believe when it's lunchtime already.
Yeah.
Where did the time go?
Yeah.
And then the opposite thing, where for whatever reason you don't get into that flow and that zen, or that you don't have that smooth interaction with a coworker who knows your move before you make it, and lunchtime will never get there, and 10 minutes goes by so slowly, and you're wearing your you're wearing your watch out, So I wonder if that's what that sort of stems from, is that this storm of thoughts gets interrupted by the flow of the work.
Yeah, it could be. I wish that monk was sitting here, because I would love to hear an expert talk about the difference between meditating and being hypnotized. Because, for example, when you're playing a video game or just surfing on the internet or watching a movie, something kind of similar happens where you're totally absorbed. But that's not meditation. And meditation is there's more value to it, I guess. So
maybe
I don't really know. I don't know, but certainly being hypnotized and being in a zombie mode, scrolling through your phone. Yeah. Maybe you're not thinking about anything and time flies by. But there can't be as much value to that as getting into the zone while you're either doing something or doing some other task.
I wonder if it's all related to, you know, we hear talk about dopamine now, and a dopamine vacuum where our brain learns what it is that causes it to secrete dopamine, and then finds ways to get us to do that thing so that you get that little hit. I don't know. I wonder if meditation and that feeling of fulfillment is part of that addiction cycle.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I can say I really don't actually know what meditation is. Mm-hmm. I watched this other video, and maybe we'll put a link to this because it's worth watching if you're a Weezer fan. It's Rivers, the main guy from the band Weezer, who's really into meditation, being interviewed by a guy who's also really into it. And you could tell that they are both really into it. And they talk about, they'll meditate for an hour or two.
Mm.
I just don't understand what exactly that means. Are you trying to keep your mind blank for a couple hours? Think about breathing? Or what I, as a kid, always thought was that you were trying to uncover like a deep thought or something.
Right. Right.
And so I actually always kind of thought meditation was a little more like you were concentrating on something very seriously, but I don't know. Maybe we should have done our homework on this, but I just showed my cards. I actually have no idea what it even is.
So I love Calvin and Hobbes. I love them. I can read that stuff over and over, and I love it. And one that I'll always remember is Calvin going into the television at night, back in the days when television programming would shut off at 10 p.m. or 12 p.m., and it would just be a blank screen. And he went in there with a bowl of tapioca to make an offering and present it to the flickering blue altar of passive entertainment that rendered linear thought impossible. And I can relate to that. And maybe we all can, that when you get drawn into a screen, boom, the screen has interrupted your linear thought. And you're able to relax and not be sort of plagued by the monkey chatter, you know, that's relentless. And so kind of to circle back to the thing about music on job sites, one of the best things for me is to get into that zone where the work is almost happening by itself. And I am not sort of compromised by the situation as it exists, but I'm able to focus on all kinds of out-of-the-box solutions that could bear on that problem. And sometimes they fit. And as I arrive at that solution, and the problem is solved and it's moved forward a little further, that is so absorbing for me. It's the only thing. But I also, in times of different times of my life, have realized that I'm kind of spinning out mentally. Yeah. That while I'm building something, I can, in a certain part of my brain, be just circling around a worry or a concern or a question that with no answer. And when I'm working by myself, I almost need the distraction of music to keep out of some sort of a little mental zone that feels kind of dangerous somehow. Is that too weird? I don't know.
Yeah. And there's no doubt that listening to music in general can be extremely energizing, especially when it's maybe, if not new music, but music you really like.
Yes.
And and the conditions are right. Like when you're driving, a lot of people enjoy listening to music when you're driving, especially alone, and you can turn it up loud, and there's just no doubt. And so I don't begrudge or judge anybody who likes having a radio on the job site.
Yeah.
It makes a lot of sense to me, but I can certainly see the other side of it as well. And in framing in particular, I mean, come on, you can't really have a radio on while you're framing because,
not if it's complex.
I mean, your head's doing like, it's like a calculator and it's just, maybe some people can. I don't know how.
There are framers that do it, but like drywall, man, crank up the music if you're taping or sanding a wall, or you're just slamming boards, you know, and the measurements are all basic and you're yelling at each other. Okay, turn the music up. Mm-hmm. Okay, but if you've got to think, or you're finishing concrete, you got a crew and the mud's down, you know, it's in shape and it's been floated and the bleed water to the surface and it's time to start troweling. Turn the music up. I don't care. It's great.
Yeah.
But you got to place your shots, right?
From the standpoint of a contractor or a person in the trades, and everybody's business and job and employer is different, but in general, is your recommendation going to be to not have a radio on if you're, you know, working for somebody? Or how would you speak, or what are the rule of thumb that you would outline for a person in the trades?
First of all, you need to get the permission of the person who is in charge of the job. You need to get the permission of the person who has a bottom line decision making authority on the job that's on site. You find out who that person is and you say, hey, do you care if I turn my radio on? Okay, and if the answer is no, turn it on. If the answer is yes, I do care, please don't. Then you say, okay, no problem. Mm-hmm. You know, and on break time, you go on your truck and you turn it up and you get your dose. But keep in mind, like on a remodel or an addition, that radio is not just getting into the space where you're working, but it's intruding on the space where the family is still living. And so from an employer's perspective, it's going to say a lot about an employee who comes into somebody's space and is oblivious of his music's effect on the people all around him. You know, because if he's that oblivious to the effect of his actions right there on that thing, he's probably not going to understand allowable tolerances or cleaning up his mess or anything else that gets into other people's space.
Yeah, that's a good point. It really does say something. And, you know, younger teenagers or maybe one extreme where they haven't learned some of this, but when you're driving and everybody at the stoplight can hear you, I'm sure it's cool to be in that car. Like, I have no doubt. And maybe you're the type of person who doesn't care.
Yeah.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
But it does say something about you. And in that instance, it tells everybody that you're a child.
That's right.
And if you're flying down the highway and you just like it, no big deal.
Crank it.
But if you're okay with everybody judging you, like, knock yourself out. That's not my point. The point is, it does say something to others, how you behave with your music in that way.
That's right. It's kind of the same thing as the clothes you show up in, right?
Yeah.
It's your persona as evidenced by the things you bring with you. It's part of your uniform. There are people, there are construction guys for whom the music is part of their uniform. Bam. And there are people for whom the absence of music. So let me just make a broad generalization, I guess. And that is, in general, music on the job site coincides with tennis shoes on the job site. Now, is that right? No, that's not right. That's just part of my stereotype speaking.
Yeah.
But there are times when tennis shoes are the right thing to wear, including on a job site. I have gone to the truck and put a pair of tennis shoes on if I was on a metal roof, because there are tennis shoes that stick so beautifully to metal roofing. And I would be perfectly willing to defend that choice against somebody that says, whoa, you have no ankle support. You're going to smash your toes. It's so dangerous. I can't believe it. Yeah, you know what? I'm not slipping off of here. But on the other hand, There are times when tennis shoes are absolutely the wrong thing for any number of reasons, and I think it's the same with music.
Yeah, I may push back on that, and some others might, because that, you know, it's like saying a collared shirt. It's like,
right.
So some people, absolutely, like they wouldn't leave their house without a collared shirt on. And there's other people who just couldn't care less, and mm-hmm. both, there's a point. And I'm sure there's tennis shoe workers, myself included, although I've kind of gotten away from it, who would have no problem going to the mat over ways mm-hmm. that they work better. But if the point is still there. It says something
it does.
About you. And I guess maybe your point's dead on, because if you show up in work boots, then there's no doubt what you're there to do. Whereas if you're wearing tennis shoes, unless somebody gets to know you, maybe there could be a little
doubt.
You
have to prove your point.
So maybe I missed what you're saying there, and you're right on.
But you don't have to show up in suspenders to be judged a worker. Okay, that's for sure.
The one thing that is kind of unforgivable, at least in my mind, is when people will have at loud volumes the radio DJ morning show people. I just short circuit. To me, not only is that mindless, but you don't even get the value of a repetitive beat or a nice, even static background noise. It's terrible. Yeah. And the game shows and the calling in, and holy smoke, that is just, I don't get that.
It's sitcoms on radio, man. Yeah. I mean, that's what it is, you know, and we devour the sitcoms and we listen to that stuff. So I love Orson Scott Card, and he has quite a bit to say about quite a few interesting things. But one of the things that he says is that the reason that popular music is so much of it is consumed is because we've fallen out of the habit of consuming poetry and stories. And every culture up till now has consumed poetry and stories voraciously. And it's kind of been pushed to the margins by what? I don't know. What has pushed it to the margins? But we're consuming our poetry and our stories and our popular music. Hmm. And if you think about it for just a second, you realize that pop music is poetry set to music of different styles.
That's really neat. And it's pretty obvious what made it obsolete. It was the Walkman and then the portable CD player and recording music before that. And mm-hmm. I mean, 100 years ago, I'm sure people would have loved to listen to music.
Yeah.
Well, 500 years ago, the king did listen to music.
That's right.
And he had a band
That's right.
in his hall or a little
That's right.
guitar player.
Yeah.
And that was
the bard.
That
he
was
had the
reserved
bard. Yeah.
for the king. Now,
That's right.
That luxury has been brought to the masses
That's
through
right.
technology.
That's
and
a great
unfortunately,
point.
Poetry is one of the casualties of it. You are exactly right.
And there's another thing that Card talks about, and he just lampoons the high priesthood of literature. As he terms it, something like that literature and poetry has been deconstructed and analyzed and criticized until what passes as poetry and quality literature now is completely irrelevant to real people mm-hmm. and can only be understood and absorbed by the people who have invested their lives in making that so obscure and so remote and so pointless for real people that only they can consume it.
Yeah.
And so he just points out that though that kind of had the effect of killing poetry because modern poetry became, frankly, inane and dumb,
at least in broad strokes.
Anywhere outside of academia.
Okay.
Okay. That then the demand for poetry manifested itself in a huge consumption of popular music.
I see.
And has fed that hunger and has scratched that itch. And I listen to a lot of different kinds of music. And there are some songs that are so compelling in different genres because of their story. Mm-hmm. You know, they'll make me cry. They'll bring me to anger. They will make me miss my dad. The poetry that's kind of enclosed in those different songs seems worthwhile.
Yeah, that's a really interesting point. Amazing how that, as a kind of byproduct or unintended consequence, that this poetry being a casualty of technology has kind of happened. That's just, I remember hearing and reading little books of cowboy poetry and mm-hmm. thinking about the times when that was big and it made perfect sense. These cowboys, mm-hmm. maybe with much, much less options for entertainment, came up with mm-hmm. this much more maybe lowbrow. It certainly mm-hmm. wasn't trying to, you know, in mm-hmm. influence culture or anybody's, mm-hmm. you know, life. It was just trying to make them smile.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And I remember hearing some of these poems and kind of enjoying them and then trying a couple different times to be like, I bet I could come up with a clever rhyme or poem mm-hmm. that's really great and realizing kind of quickly like, oh my gosh, that's hard.
That's hard.
And not only, and so in order to get good at it, like everything, you have to spend a lot of time mm-hmm. practicing and getting better. And mm-hmm. I mean, the big poets, just like the famous painters have probably tens of thousands of paintings that mm-hmm. they mm-hmm. done.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, their best 10, everybody could mm-hmm. call them by name and you can see those, but you can't see the 10,000 sketches yeah. and stuff to practice, you know, maybe yeah. they had to draw a hand 800 times
yeah, yeah.
to yeah. get the good one. And it'd be like that with poetry as well. Like in order to make great poetry, you got to make a lot of bad poetry yeah. first.
There's got to be truth to that. And then the whole thing about imitation being the sincerest form of flattery, that you find somebody whose style you like mm-hmm. and you start analyzing what they're doing there and then you try to incorporate that. I learned just the other day, so Teddy Roosevelt, you know, you may know, was a big hunter. I didn't realize that he was a writer. He wrote 42 books.
Yeah.
And so as I was listening to this fellow talk about the anthology of Roosevelt's writings that he'd put together, he pointed out that Ernest Hemingway loved Teddy Roosevelt as an author and read all his stuff, and that you can see a lot of the influence of Teddy Roosevelt's writing in Ernest Hemingway's writing. Now, that's interesting to me, that these guys who take things to such a high point sprang off of something that somebody else had taken to a really respectable point, and probably, I don't know, maybe that's true for the cowboy poets, right? They listened to somebody and thought, like, just like you, well, I think I could do that.
Yeah.
It's pretty cool.
Maybe this came up in whatever you were listening to about him, but I think he was an especially just energetic person.
Yeah, yeah.
And hunting big game and writing books. I mean, he just had excess energy and that resulted in output.
And he started out as a very seriously asthmatic and sickly boy.
That's crazy.
In fact, his parents expected him and the doctors expected him to die in his 20s. So you need to slow up, man. You're going to wear yourself. You're going to die. And he said, well, if I'm going to die young, I'm going to die active. How about that?
Wow.
Yeah.
Almost like he decided to have energy or something.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's possible.
Maybe that's what music does on the job sites, right? It brings energy to the job sites, even if people don't feel like being energetic.
Well, it definitely does. Having music on while you're working can be really great. I really feel like I can see both sides of this because I so often am very clearly in one side or the other. Like it's the last thing I want for lots of reasons, or I don't even want to start working until I find my headphones. Mm-hmm. I don't even, this is too mindless and too boring.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so I need to have something to give me like, get my mind, like, you know, focus on it. All right. Well, if you guys have any comments to add or insights here, the comments on YouTube are going to be the best place to put them. We're going to try to make these podcasts a little longer, but it's going to take us a while to kind of build to that and less about having things to talk about and staying on topic, more about just scheduling our time.
Mm-hmm.
It'd be nice to sit down for 2 or 3 hours and treat it like Joe Rogan style and really get into the weeds on something, but
bring somebody in here who can really give us some things to chew on.
Yeah. Unfortunately, we got other things to do at the moment. So we're going to try to keep them, push them as long as we can and keep them interesting. We really appreciate the feedback. And if you have in particular ideas or thoughts on how we can improve or do better at this, please let us know. And anything last to add, Ted?
This is all just really new for me. I think Nate spent a fair amount of time listening to podcasts, but it's great. It gives me a chance to talk to my boy. How do you beat that, right? And so, yeah, we're interested in your thoughts. We're interested in whether or not this has some sort of a positive potential for somebody. Let us know.
Yeah, one of the reasons we're doing this in general, our YouTube channel is really fulfilling and great, but having a podcast like this allows us to diversify slightly. Mm-hmm. And YouTube is making changes all the time, and we're not in a position where they would necessarily have a problem with any of our content, but it still feels like it's like building a house on somebody else's property.
That's right.
You know, this gives us a little way to maybe diversify or at least dip our toe in the water of something, you know, related but different.
So I love that analogy. Instead of building a house on somebody else's property, we're just going to move our RV in there and we're going to level it up and we're going to hook up to their hookups. But if the time comes that that's no longer available as a site to have that RV, we'll just hitch onto it and take it wherever it needs to go.
Yeah, quite literally. I've got two hard drives full of every video and every final video. So it would not be hard to post those all somewhere else and we could just shoot out an email. That's why we have an email list, by the way. So if we ever do need to get in touch with our audience or you, we have another way to do it. This is making it sound like we expect something bad from YouTube. And like I mentioned, we don't. I think we're very much in the safe zone. And I don't think YouTube is going anywhere, despite a lot of the negative press about their damaging content creators. I don't think that's actually true. I think they have a lot of reason to care about and want to keep around their yeah, people. So it's not something I'm actually worried about, but we are going to try a podcast out. So thanks for listening. Thanks for tuning in, and we'll catch you next time.